Astakurki, John. Praying, Shikaho, Shikrishna, Chaitanya, Prabhu, Nityananda, Shri, Dwaita, Gadadhar, Harshi, Vasadi, Gora, Bhakti, Vrinda, Ki, John. Shri, Shri, Radha, Krishna, Go, Gopina, Shyama, Kunda, Radha, Kunda, Giri, Govardhan, Ki, John. Vrindavan, Dham, Ki, John. Mathura, Dham, Ki, John. Navadri, Mayapur, Dham, Ki, John. Jagannath, Puri, Dham, Ki, John. Gagamai Juna Devi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai, Gaura Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale. Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinamane Namaste Saraswati Devi. Gauravani Pacharani Nirase Sisindavani Paskata Desatani Abandiham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Stha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Paditana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lavita Shri Vishakam Vitam Stha Panchakalpati Vistaki Pasindavi Abhitapati Tanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavi. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So it's June 16th, Kadasi 2016, Bhaktivedanta Manor in London, and it's wonderful to be back here. Thank you all for having us here. And we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 4, The Atrocities of King Kamsa. Text 19, and this is Kamsa speaking to Vasudeva and Devaki. Bhuvi Bhaumani Bhutani
Bhuvi Bhaumani Bhutani
Yataya Chapyanti Yataya Chapyat Yataya Chapayanti Cha
Yataya Chapayanti Cha
Nayam Atma Tada Tadaiteshu
Nayam Atma Tadaiteshu
Vipayeti Yataiva Bhu Bhuvi, on the surface of the world,
Bhaumani,
all material products from birth such as pots,
Bhutani,
which are produced, Yata,
as
Yanti,
appear in form,
Apayanti,
disappear,
broken or mixed with the earth. Cha, and
not.
I am Atma,
the soul or spiritual identity.
Tata,
similarly,
Eteshu,
among all these
products of material elements.
Viparyeti
is changed or broken.
Yata,
as
Eva,
certainly,
Rumu,
the earth.
Translation and purport by Sri
Prabhupada. Again, this is Kamsa speaking. In this world, we can see that pots, dolls, and other products of the earth appear, break, and then disappear, mixing with the earth. Similarly, the bodies of all conditioned living entities are annihilated, but the living entities, like the earth itself, are unchanging and never annihilated. Nahanyate hanyamani shurire. Purport. Although Kamsa is described as a demon, he had good knowledge of the affairs of Atmatattva, the truth of the self. 5,000 years ago, there were kings like Kamsa, who is described as an asura, but he was better than modern politicians and diplomats who have no knowledge about Atmatattva. That's quite a statement, that our modern politicians and diplomats are worse than Kamsa.
As stated in the Vedas, asambho yayam purusha, the spirit soul has no connection with the changes of the material body. The body undergoes six changes: birth, growth, sustenance, byproducts, dwindling, and then annihilation. But the soul undergoes no such changes. Even after the annihilation of a particular bodily form, the original source of the bodily elements does not change. The living entity enjoys the material body, which appears and disappears, but the five elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, remain the same. The example given here is that pots and dolls are produced from the earth, and when broken or destroyed, they mingle with their original ingredients. In any case, the source of supply remains the same. As already discussed, the body is made according to the desires of the soul. The soul desires, and thus the body is formed. Krishna therefore says in Bhagavad Gita 18:61, Ishvara Sarvabhutanam Rajeshyatumatisthati Ramayan Sarvabhutani Yantrudanamaya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. Neither the supersoul, Paramatma, nor the individual soul changes its original spiritual identity. The Atman does not undergo birth, death, or changes like the body. Therefore, a Vedic aphorism says, Asango Yayam Purusha, it's the second time Prabhupada's quoted that in this purport. Although the soul is conditioned within this material world, he has no connections with the changes of the material body. Bhuvi, bo, mani, bhutani, yata, yat, yatyan, payanticha, nayam, atma, tatayate, shu, vipoyeti, yatayabhu. In this world, we can see that pots, dolls, and other products of the earth appear, break, and then disappear, mixing with the earth. Similarly, the bodies of all conditioned living entities are annihilated, but the living entities, like the earth itself, are unchanging and never annihilated. So here Kamsa is preaching basic philosophy of you're not this body. He's saying, you, the body, are different. You, the soul, are different from the body. The body's changing, you don't change. The elements of the body come together and form your body, and then again they'll separate and they'll go back to their original state, and you remain as they are. So Kamsa was very good at knowing the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. We say that, right? Oh, they know the philosophy. So he knew the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Not only did he know the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, but he was apparently practicing some of the aspects of Krishna consciousness. He was practicing some sadhusanga. Yeah, he had association with Vasudeva and Devaki. Is that a pretty elevated association? What would you say? It was even Devaki's family. Would you like to have them in your Fasra family? Vasudeva Devaki. He got to see Narad Muni, who generally is only visible to the demigods. And he even got to see Krishna. He even got to see Krishna. Got to see Durga Devi. I mean, so he was doing some sadhusanga. He was even meditating on the Lord. We say always remember Krishna and never forget him. So I think it's Rupa Goswami who says the demons are better than he is because they're always meditating on the Lord. So we may be struggling, even in our japa, or in the kirtan, or in the bhagavatam class, what to speak of the rest of the day, we may be struggling to have our mind fixed upon Krishna. And Kamsa didn't struggle at all. In fact, he was trying to forget Krishna, and he couldn't do it. Right? And the gopis complain about this to Uddhava. They say, we're trying to forget Krishna, but we can't. They say, maybe he's forgotten about us, but we cannot forget about him. So Kamsa was very expert at these things. But he's not a devotee, he's a demon. Is that interesting? He knows the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. He has association with extremely exalted devotees. And he also had association with Nanda Maharaj. Narada. He was couldn't stop thinking of Krishna, even if he tried. And still, he's a demon. What makes us a devotee is a very interesting question. Of course, there was one time, I think it was Ridhananda Maharaj, wrote a poem, sent it to Prabhupada. where he talked about himself as a devotee, and Prabhupada said, no, no, that's very high. Try to be the servant of a devotee. Actually, when we discuss Manashiksha, we're going to be doing an introduction on Saturday morning, and then we're going to be doing in-depth a week from Friday. Yes, is that right? A week from Friday, we'll be doing in-depth with Manashiksha, and we'll be looking especially in verse 7 about thinking that we're a devotee. So what makes us a devotee? Interesting question. How do we become a devotee? You know, people ask all the time, well, when did you become a devotee? I'm not sure. Did I become a devotee yet? I mean, you can talk about physically, when did I join the Hare Krishna? You know, when did I move into the ashram? Or when did I get initiated? Or when did I start chanting 16 rounds or something like that? But when did you become a devotee? So let's see what philosophy comes and knows here, and how this can maybe help us or not help us. So he's saying here that the soul is unchanging through the bodily changes, which reminds us of which verse in the Bhagavad Gita? Which I think is one of the verses on your Gita book. Yes, and then Prabhupada's quoting the Bhagavad Gita verse here. What verse is he quoting? Well, he quoted that in the purport, but in the verse, Srila Prabhupada stuck in. Yeah, what's the whole verse? Najayate miyate bhagadache, nayam bhutra bhagita bhagavaya, ajavadja shasvacharyam parano, nanyate hanyamane shuribe. The body is changing, but I remain the same. So we all have an experience of this. Correct? Yes? I think we only have one baby in the temple who is sleeping. She's sleeping. So all of us had baby bodies, but if you took a photograph of our baby bodies, and you took all these photographs, if we had a contest, you know, Mahaprasadam contest, I have to do it tomorrow, I guess. So if we had a plate, you'd get a plate of Mahaprasadam, if you could match all of the baby pictures with people's current body. It would be difficult, wouldn't it? Right? Plus, I don't think there's very many people here in their 80s or 90s. Columbia was not here. But if you then could take a picture of us, you know, in our 80s and 90s, of course, just at Rathiyatra, I was talking with Anuttama Prabhu, and someone came up to him and said, oh, is that your mother? That would make me about 90. Hare Krishna. But if we could, put up, you know, photographs of us as babies, you know, and then at like 20 and at 90, and you tried to match all three pictures, would you be able to do that? Right, you ever looked at old photo albums that shows your grandparents when they were young? Right, I remember I'd look at these photo albums, seeing my grandparents when they got married. Wow, grandma looked like that. Right? I remember showing a devotee once, there was a picture in Back to Godhead of my family, I think I was 25. And I said, yeah, there's me and my family in Back to Godhead. And she said, where are you in that picture? But yet we're the same person. And it's not just like you take the baby body and you blow it up like a balloon, you know. It's changed. It's a different body, correct? It's a very different body. I mean, even scientifically, all the cells have changed. But it looks quite different. And our mind has also changed, hopefully, from when we were two. Yes? I hope so. We have a different way of processing the world. Different way of understanding, and that also changed. You know, I know people who've changed their political party. Isn't it? People go from being conservative to liberal, or liberal to conservative. Change their mentality. We talk about people getting radicalized. People can change their whole mentality. They can go from being a good citizen to being a criminal, from being a criminal to being a good citizen. And yet they're the same person. As Prabhupada would say, the mother will not come and say, you know, where's my baby? Where's my baby? I remember my father seeing me when I was in my 40s, and he said, oh, my baby! I said, Dad, I'm a grandma. He said, not to me, you're my baby. And he didn't say, where's my baby gone? Oh, no, my baby's died. She's gone. He said, you're the same person. And conversely, when someone does die, the body's there, but we cry. The first time I heard Prabhupada speak in Vyasasan, he was talking about this, how we want to see God, but we can't even see the little piece of God, that's the soul. So if you've ever seen anybody die, or even seen an animal die, you know, the body's there, and yet the person is gone. So when the body changes, we see the person is not gone, and when the person's gone, even though the body's not changing, we see that it's the person's not there. So very easy to understand that we're not this body. It's not a difficult thing to understand. Especially because we, the soul, Prabhupada says here, that neither the super soul Paramatman nor the individual soul changes its original spiritual identity. And we especially feel this, you know, those of us who are beyond 20 years old, especially feel this, that you just don't relate to the older body. It doesn't seem real. You don't feel like an old person. I remember one of my aunts saying this to me many, many years ago. This is before I joined the movement. She said, you know, I walk past a shop window and I notice my reflection. I think, well, who is that old lady? I don't know who she is. And similar things happen when people have sometimes out-of-body experiences, you know, near-death experiences. And they'll leave their body and they're hovering above their body. And many times, you know, once they come back into the body and they're describing the experience, they say they looked at this body, you know, hit by a car lying on the road, and they just think, oh, you know, he's in pretty bad shape. They don't identify with it at all. Someone should help that guy lying on the road. So just a little introspection, we can understand we're not this body. Frankly, that's something we really don't need to read the Bhagavad Gita or the Bhagavatam to understand. Just a little introspection. I must be different from this body. You know, even those who say that all we are is a bunch of chemicals, you know, we're just some matter collided somehow in primordial soup, an electrical charge came, you know, became alive, and then it transformed into giraffes and orangutans and palm trees and people. But even people who have this kind of philosophy, they don't really live like that. They don't live as if emotions don't matter and personality doesn't matter and relationships don't matter. So we all know that. Now the question is then, well, why do we have a body? If I'm not this body, what am I doing in this body? And Prabhupada talks about here how the soul is enjoying the material body. I don't know about all of you, but I don't enjoy this material body very much. It's a prison. Yes, a very interesting prison. We're each in a kind of solitary confinement, isn't it? And we can walk around in our prison cell. It's quite fascinating how the Lord's designed this prison. But we're definitely imprisoned. Each of our bodies can only do certain things, many things it can't do. I mean, I'd love to be able to just fly without an airplane, wouldn't you? When I was a kid in school, I wanted to be able to expand myself so that I could be in school and at the beach. I didn't know. Why can't I do that? You know, or become invisible was something I really wanted to do. And, you know, our bodies are limited. They're very limited, and they do all kinds of things that we don't particularly like. Now, the demigods, they don't sweat, they don't have to have washing machines. They perfectly digest all their food. But even they have difficulty with their bodies. And then we're imprisoned on this earth with gravity, so it doesn't seem like we're enjoying it very much. I will get a little pleasure out of it here and there. But why do we have this? So for that, we do have to go to the scriptures, and here we are told, Srila Prabhupada's telling us, we have this body by our own desire. We have this body by our own desire. He says, the body is made according to the desires of the soul desires, and thus the body is formed. So then, of course, we may say, well, you know, it doesn't seem to really match my desires. But this just means that we have very foolish desires. And we experience this in our ordinary life. We think we want something. We place an order for it, we get it, and then we say, why did I want this? Yes, has this happened to everybody? And so I give this example all the time. I had a professor in graduate school
who said that when he was 19, he attended a seminar about how to become a school superintendent by the time you're 33. Usually people become superintendent at 50 or so. Superintendent in America is you're in charge of a whole district of schools. You're in charge of many schools. So he took this seminar like Shastra. He followed every single step that this man told him. And indeed, he became a school superintendent when he was 33. It worked. And then he told us, he said, I found that I didn't like being a school superintendent. He said, the job was so stressful that my wife divorced me. He said, I actually hated it. And I realized what I really wanted to do all along was be a teacher. And I became a college professor. So this is our experience. We desire something, we work for it, and then when we get it, we go, bleh. Isn't that a fact many times? That doesn't mean that we didn't desire it. The fact that once we get it, we say, what did I want this for? You know, you want some big, grand home. This was somebody's home, yes? Imagine this being just your personal property. I read about some oil sheik that it cost him $250,000 per day to maintain his homes and planes and cars. Imagine being under that kind of pressure. So one may think, I want this beautiful home, and then you've got to take care of it. And you may think, oh, why did I want it? Right? Sobri Muni, who married 50 women. For most people, one woman is too much. At 50, you know, and then after a while, he said, why did I want this? So he wanted it, but once he got it, he said, why do I want it? So it doesn't mean we didn't want it, is my point. We are very capable of having foolish desires. It's not out of the range of our experience. We don't know what it really means. You think of all the fairy tales that we read where people got wishes, you remember those? Some magical being comes and says, I'm going to grant you 3 wishes. And usually the third wish is to do what? What's usually the third wish? To undo the previous 2 wishes. Yes. Generally with the third wish. We don't know what it means. We don't know what fulfilling our desires means materially. We don't really understand it. But still, it's by our desires. Our desires as exhibited, of course, by our actions, not only our desires, but our desires by what we do. If you just say, I want to be a doctor, and you lie on the couch all day, you don't really want to be a doctor, not very much. Does that make sense to everybody? If I say, oh, I'd love to speak fluent Sanskrit and Bengali, but I don't put any time into learning the languages, then you can say I desire it, but it's not very meaningful. So our desires as exhibited by our actions, that's what karma means. I have certain desires, I act according to those desires, and then I get certain reactions. Karma guna sangasya. Sadasad janma yonishu. That according to how I associate with the modes of nature, in my karma I get certain body. So once we understand that the principle is desire, and desire as exhibited by action, then we realize that we have agency. Because frankly, in this world, we often feel that we don't really have agency. We don't really have autonomy. We feel very forced. Isn't it a fact? Arjuna asked this question, why do I feel forced? When we talk about Manushiksha, this is going to be when we get to verse 5 of Manushiksha. Why is it that we feel forced to do things against our own values, against our own ideals? We don't feel very free. Do we feel very free? Can we say, no, I don't want to get old, or no, I don't want to get sick, or I don't want to have to use the toilet? Or, I mean, you can say, I'm not going to eat for a day. It's hard to say, I'm not going to eat for a month. And after that, saying I'm not going to eat means I'm not going to live in this body anymore. If you want to live in this body, at a certain point, you have to eat. Forced. So it seems like we don't have agency. But here the Shastra is saying, no, you do. It really is up to you. It's really your choice. It's all of us, all of our choices. We are the architects of our own fortune.
We are deciding by what we think about, by what we desire, by what we do. We are deciding who we are. Actually, we'll also talk about that in Mana Shiksha in regards to sound. We're creating our future in terms of our actions, our sound, our thoughts, our desires at every moment. And we have a lot more control over these than we think. We really have a lot of control over what we desire, what we meditate on, and what we do. So then the question becomes, what should I desire? What is the best thing to desire? So in materialistic families, materialistic society, they say the best thing to desire is what? What should you desire? Well, happiness, yes, but in what form? Wealth. What else?
Money, beauty, power.
Money, beauty, power. Family, society. Okay? Get a good education. Make sure it's from a top, prestigious school. We're looking for what we call socioeconomic status. High education, high wealth, and a high status job. It's like you talk to people, especially born in India, it's like you only have two or three occupations you can choose from, isn't it? Somehow the range of hundreds of thousands of occupations is just like doctor and IT specialist. You have to get a high status job, and you have to make a lot of money, and you have to have a big home, a fancy car. And this is what you're told to desire. Is that correct? Those of us who are educated out in the world, this is how we were indoctrinated from day one. And especially if you watch the media, which now has become more and more and more pervasive and multifaceted. And when I was a little girl, there were three channels all in black and white and just live programming for like 6 hours a day. And they're all just saying the same thing. Desire wealth, desire prestige, desire, you know, a happy family life. And some power and influence in the world. That's what you should desire. But we say, no, you should desire something else. Because even if you get all those things, to the people who have those things, are they all universally happy? Are they? Are all the rich, famous doctors and IT specialists with the BMW in the garage and a flat-screen TV in every room, are they all happy? Are the richest, most famous, most beautiful celebrities in the world, are they all happy? Are they? 90% of them, maybe? I don't think so. So that can't be the right formula. If that's the right formula, then we would expect, at least, you know, we'll be charitable, at least 90% of the people who achieve them, we won't demand 100%, they should be happy. But they're not. We find, you know, every day you can read in the scandal sheets how they have a drug problem, an alcohol problem, they're getting divorced. These are signs of unhappiness. They're in some kind of criminal activity. That's how we knew Hiranyakashipu was unhappy when he was held the whole universe. He was always intoxicated. He was always yelling at people for no reason. That's how you can tell somebody's not happy. So what should we desire? So you ready for something a little radical here? Is that all right? Maybe a little radical. Can we be a little controversial? Is that all
right?
Okay.
Yeah,
do. All right. I have to ask you to tell me what you're saying. So Prabhupada says here, this is what Prabhupada says, neither the super soul, Paramatma, nor the individual soul changes its original spiritual identity. We have, believe it or not, and we're getting more and more of a contingent of people who debate this, it's become a very controversial point, we have an original spiritual identity. I didn't think that was controversial 10 years ago, but anyway, it's become very controversial. And that's what we should desire. Now, how nice is that? We should desire to be who we are. We should desire to be who we really are. All of our problem is that I'm desiring to be somebody that I'm not. That's my problem. And all of these bodies are somebody that I'm not. It doesn't matter whether you have, you know, a brown or pink or purple body, or a male body or a female body, or a lizard body or an elephant body or a palm tree body. Those are all things that we are not. We should desire to be who we are. And we have an original spiritual identity. If we have an identity, if we have a personality, if we have a personality, what does personality mean? What does that mean if we say someone has a personality? What does that mean, personality? Any ideas? A certain character, yes? What does that mean? How would we define character and personality? Some thoughts?
Views, likes, dislikes.
Views, likes, and dislikes. A certain view on things, yes. Certain things you like, certain things you don't like. Just like Nanda Maharaj, he likes to wear what color?
Green.
Green. He likes green. I'm sure he likes other colors too. I'm sure he sometimes wears other colors. But he really likes green. That's evidence of a personality. What else is evidence of a personality? Views, likes, dislikes, what else?
Association.
Association. Who you want to associate with. Who you are associated with. Because we define our personality a lot by I am have this relation to so-and-so. What else defines personality?
Diet. Diet. Diet.
Diet. Oh, what you like to eat.
Yeah, mentally.
Yeah, what you like to eat. Actually, we find Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he's feeding the devotees, he gives each of them their favorite preps. Krishna also does this. When he's eating with the cowherd boys, he gives each of them what they particularly like to eat. You know, one time at a festival, I said to a devotee, "This is wonderful prasadam." And she said, "All prasadam is spice prasadam." Okay. Not going to compliment the prasadam to you anymore. But we all have, you know, particular taste. One person really likes gulab-jamun, another person doesn't. What else is evidence of personality?
Opinion.
What?
Opinion.
Opinion. Like views, yeah? You have a certain opinion on things. Are there different opinions in the spiritual world about how to serve Krishna? Yes, there are. Some of the gopis say Krishna likes it when you argue with him, and then the gopis say, no, Krishna doesn't like it when you argue with him. You can argue a little bit, but not so much. You're arguing too much. No, Krishna likes it when you argue a lot. Huh. So there's different opinions. There's different views. And also there's natures, like if someone's outgoing or they're shy, right? Or they're very serious or they're very joking, correct? Right? Everything we call personality in this world exists in some spiritual form. So we have an original spiritual identity. We have an original spiritual personality. Now, if we have an original spiritual personality, if it's spiritual, that means it must be in relation to
Krishna.
I don't know why this is such a radical, controversial idea, but it seems to have become that. So those of you who know the Chaturasloka, we were just recently teaching Chaturasloka in Denver. So in the second verse, Krishna says, whatever appears to be of value, if it is without relation to me, it has no reality. Know it to be my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. So if something is of value without relationship to Krishna, then that is the definition of illusion. That's the definition of Maya. something that appears valuable outside of a relationship with Krishna. Therefore, our original spiritual identity must be in relationship to Krishna. Is that good logic? Does that work for everybody? So that's what we should be desiring. We should be desiring to find out who we are, who we always have been from the beginning, and who we always will be. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these things, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. Our spiritual identity is not something that we're developing, you know, we're creating through our sadhana. It is something we are awakening through our sadhana. It is something we are discovering through our sadhana. And that's what we should be desiring. When we have that desire, then we no longer have to take on these changing, false bodies. Then we will manifest our original spiritual form. At which point we will be not only just completely satisfied, unlimitedly, ever expandingly satisfied. Because it's who we really are and who we really want to be. And there's no disappointment in that desire. So Kamsa's not doing that. He's not doing that. He's not taking the step from, I understand I'm not this body, I understand that I'm having these bodies by my desires, I understand that there's the material nature is changing, but I'm not changing, therefore I should desire my original relationship with Krishna in loving service. He doesn't take that step. In fact, he's fighting Krishna, quite literally so. So, my dear friends, we can also adhere to this philosophy and be fighting Krishna. It is possible. It is entirely possible. We can be in this movement ostensibly. We can work out how to put the pleats in our cloth, keep it from falling off. Right? First time I ever put on a sari, as soon as I started dancing in the kirtan, it started like Draupadi's sari. That's the little 4-year-old girl looked up to me. So, yeah, we can figure out that kind of thing and how to put on our tilak. I remember when Mahadudi Prabhu was in Soho, he'd always be, you know, your tilak isn't quite perfect. And we can work out all of that. We can work out the lingo, you know, the pamho agusp. I wonder if once we take over the world, that would be how people say hello to each other instead of good morning. Pamho agusp. You know, we can work out all that kind of stuff. We can work out, you know, even the humble talk. Oh, no, no, Prabhu, you know, I have no good qualities. You take them out. We can figure all that out. And we can still be fighting Krishna. We can still be resisting Krishna. We can be resisting giving Krishna our desires. Resisting giving Krishna our emotions. As I say, when we get into Manashiksha, we'll be going into this in depth. This particularly with verse 6 about bathing in donkey urine. That's everybody's favorite verse, by the way. So we can have this kind of dichotomy between what we know and what we're actually doing. What we're apparently doing externally, what we know intellectually, and what we're doing with our emotions and with our desires. But what does Krishna say in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita 12:9? He says, if you can't always be absorbed with love for me, then practice sadhana bhakti, and in this way develop a
desire,
iccha. In this way develop a desire. As Prabhupada says here, the body is made according to the desires of the soul desires, and thus the body is formed. So the purpose of everything that we are doing, worshipping the deity so beautifully, the deities are worshipped here. Cleaning the temple, chanting Hare Krishna, coming to the class, observing vows. Some of you are going to be observing some Dhrita Vrta today. The whole purpose is to change our desire and redirect our emotion. That is the purpose, and if we miss that, then although we may look good, we are really just kamsa. Thank you very much. Anyone has questions or comments or additional subtractions? Chastisements. Yes, please.
Thank you. Very nice class. Will everyone be desiring to be a servant of Krishna, or could they be a servant of other expansions of Krishna?
Well, of course there are servants of other expansions. It's not that Ramchandra has no devotees. So in the spiritual world, there's also an Ayodhya, as you read in the Brihad Bhagavatam. There's also those who want to live in Vaikuntha. Prabhupada talks about Bhijma, how Bhijma is praying at the last moment to the gopis to let him be with Narayana in Vaikuntha. And Prabhupada says, really, there's no difference. It's just a matter of personal taste. And of course, you can be in more than one place at a time. So there are jivas who are Ram's monkeys and Krishna's cowherd boys, and they're dancing with Lord Chaitanya in the Rath Yatra all simultaneously. That's also there. Yes?
I have a question. Do we not say that because of the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we change the mood of the Loka Vidhava? So how does this also?
Okay, my question is, do we not say that by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we can end up with loving mood of Goloka Vrindavan?
Definitely.
And how does this fit then with
Goloka Vrindavan? That we have an eternal identity.
Yeah, okay, I have an eternal identity.
Well, even some of Lord Chaitanya's followers wanted to be with Ramchandra. There was that South Indian Brahmana. That's such a sweet story, isn't it? There is a South Indian Brahmana who invited Lord Chaitanya for lunch. You know, so Lord Chaitanya comes and he's waiting, and the Brahmana hasn't even started cooking yet. And he says, well, you invited me for lunch. I can't cook. What's the problem? Brahmana's taken the universal mother seat. I can't cook. Lord Chaitanya says, no, Ravana can't touch Sita. You can only touch the Chaya Sita. Don't worry, you can cook. And Lord Chaitanya was so moved by this Brahmana's method of worship that when he was traveling, he found the Korma Purana that explained how Ravana had actually taken a Chaya Sita. And he went to the head of the temple and he said, can I have this page? He took the original and had a copy made, so there was a copy, duplicate page, put in the original book. And Lord Chaitanya took the original book. And then he backtracked. He was walking. And he backtracked to go to see that Brahmana again, to give him that original page from the Korma Purana. How much Mahaprabhu honored this devotee's relationship with Lord Ramchandra. So that's also there. But very nice for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, right? We can immediately go to Goloka Vrindavan, and it's very easy then to awaken our mood in Goloka if that's our mood. Now we find that we have Bhagavatamrita, Gopakumar had to go even through Vaikuntha. Right? He went through Vaikuntha, through Ayodhya, and through Dwarka, finally got to Vrindavan. He didn't go there directly, but because of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So you can go directly. But if you don't want to go, you won't be forced. No, I want to go to Vaikuntha. You have to go to Goloka. It's not going to be like that. Oh, I just want to serve Narayana. No, I'm sorry. Not allowed. That's not. I mean, I have a godbrother who wants to go to Vaikuntha. He says, I don't want to go to Vaikuntha. I want to go to Vaikuntha. Okay. I know devotees in the Hare Krishna movement who want to go to Dwarka. Krishna likes Dwarka too. I'm trying to shut down Dwarka. also. So if that's, if that's your eternal identity, then that's also facilitated. Everything is facilitated in Mahaprabhu's movement up to the highest. The highest is, don't think of it materially like highest. Don't think of it like this is the prime minister, this is the queen, this is some status. You move up to the vice president's office and you get a corner office. It's not like that. Everything is the highest for that jiva. So for a particular jiva, their highest may be that they're a flower in Vaikuntha. That's that they don't want anymore. That's what they want. Is that okay?
Hare Krishna. So you appear to be skirting on the debatable subject of whether we earn our shroop or whether we already have our spiritual form, that we are either going to earn it that we haven't got yet.
I tried not to skirt it, I tried to hit it.
Yeah, you hit it pretty good now on the head, but indirectly you did, yeah. So, I mean, obviously you're supporting the point of view that we already have our shroop, it's there waiting for us, and we just have to remember it. It's not that we have to earn it.
Original.
It's not that we come in from the pause.
That's just what it says here, I don't know, just to me, pretty clear English.
Yeah.
Original spiritual identity.
Yeah, back to Godhead. So it's something that we already had, or we've forgotten, in a sense, and we already have it now. We just
if you want to be a follower of Srila Prabhupada, and if you don't want to be a follower of Prabhupada, then that's another. Sorry to be.
So the conception was somehow from the pause of Mahavishnu, or it actually come from the Brahmacharya.
Well, I take that as a separate question.
Yeah,
separate. I take that as a separate question. So that question would say whether the original spiritual identity was active or dormant. It could be dormant. I mean, I personally find it much more plausible, much more logical, much more satisfying, and much more in line with Srila Prabhupada to say that original identity was an active one. But I have not found that saying that original identity was a dormant one makes any change in the process of bhakti. So my conclusion is, like Prabhupada said, don't talk about that much because it doesn't make the slightest bit of difference. So if you want to say original identity was dormant rather than active, it doesn't change anything. Nothing changes. Unless you start blaming God for your situation, then something changes. Then you have a hard time developing humility. So if we think that it's God's fault that I'm here, that God, there's a God who just whimsically said, well, I think these guys are going to have eternal life of bliss and knowledge, and these guys aren't. I have a little hard time with a God like that. I'm not quite sure I want to live with him eternally. I don't find that attractive. But as long as one takes personal responsibility for one's being here, and as long as one understands that we have an eternal identity, that doesn't change anything with the process of bhakti. As soon as you say we don't have an eternal identity, then the whole process of bhakti changes. So if you switch that belief, you start changing the practice as well, quite dramatically so. Because if you say that we didn't have an original personality and we are developing a spiritual personality, then I'm going to be choosing now what spiritual personality I would like to have. Well, that seems kind of dangerous to me on a practical level, because I've been choosing for many lifetimes what kind of personality I wanted to have, and I haven't done a very good job of it. Any of you like totally happy with the personality you have in this life? Any of you think it's just like the most perfect? Nobody? Oh, what a shame. So this is the problem, and I think if I were to mentally construct a spiritual personality, then I would probably mess it up. And then it would be such a mental thing. Well, let's see, it might be better to be a grass because it's more humble. Yeah, but then the gopis are higher. But the cowherd boys, each of them is Krishna's favorite, and the gopis are always lamenting that they're never going to be Krishna's anything. And maybe, I don't know. You would do that. Or then you'd say, okay, well, the gopis are highest. All right, well, let me find a guru who's a gopi, and let me hang out with other gopis. And we've had groups like this. Sorry to say. So if you have that philosophy, then you're going to think, well, let me join the gopi group. you know, and then I'll become a gopi. And it changes your whole process. The other thing it changes philosophically, and this I think is rather insidious, is that if I don't have an original spiritual identity, then what am I? Am I a person? If my spiritual identity is not inherent and beginningless, then what am I? How am I a person? Do you follow the logic of this? If I'm not a person in relation to Krishna, how am I a person? Because Krishna says anything of value without relation to me is illusion. So if I say that I am eternally a person, but without relation to Krishna, that is illusion. Therefore, if I'm not eternally a person in relation to Krishna, how am I eternally a person? I become not a person. So I asked someone who propounds this philosophy, I said, how are we eternal persons, but not in relationship to Krishna, before we do sadhana bhakti? And this person said, well, we're all separate sparks. I said, what, geographically? There's no space in the spiritual world. What are we talking about? Geographic, separate. You know, I'm a spark in the right-hand corner and you're a spark in the left-hand corner. And that's how I'm a person? Is that how we define personality? Is that how we define personality? So we mean by personality? So everything we mean when we say personality, if I don't have that in relationship to Krishna, I don't see how I have it at all in any way that is what we would call spiritual. You then lead to impersonalism. You lead to that the ultimate reality is that we are not persons. We are sparks without sparks of spirit, without any kind of separately, uniquely defining characteristics. Because if I have a separate, uniquely defining characteristic without relation to Krishna, that is illusion. So I find that very dangerous. So if you say we don't have an inherent personality in relation to Krishna, A, it changes the process of sadhana bhakti, especially on the higher levels. And B, it leads directly to impersonalism. I don't see how you can avoid going to an impersonal conclusion. I just don't see how you do that. And people have tried to give me explanations how to do it. Like one of their devotees said to me, well, we have our various personalities in the body. In that way, we're always a person. And I said, but that's an illusory personality. And what about when we're in Mahavishnu's body and we don't have a material personality? So in what sense are we persons then? Is that okay? Yes.
Sometime back, somebody asked me a question, which was a very tough, was difficult to answer. He said, this is a senior devotee friend. Mm. He said, when we go back home, back to Godhead, what does that mean? How do you become manifest into the spiritual world? Because there is no birth, there is no death. You just pop up like that. So what is your opinion? I mean, what is your
understanding? It's not a question of an opinion. I mean, we have Gopal Kumar who just traveled there. And we have also entities who travel there by airplane. There's Vaikuntha airplane that can deliver them. Lightning and illumination occur simultaneously. Narada Muni's spiritual body fully manifested. And you can go in an airplane and you can just appear there. Why not? Maybe even the higher demigods can just jump around from one planet to another.
Because he was going farther. I also said that.
That's Shastra.
But then he asked, okay, so then how do you know which family you belong to?
This is very nice to explain. First of all, that should already start to awaken in this life. That's the idea. That is supposed to awaken in this life.
while we're in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness on the Earth planet. You know, they have that thing that they say in the beginning of the Yajna, where you are? In Jambudvip, in the universe of four-headed Brahma, in the Kali Yuga, while Lord Brahma is 51. Now, that's supposed to manifest. We're supposed to become gradually aware of all of that. That's what's supposed to happen. And if we've attained enough awareness of that, then in our next birth, we go to the planet where Krishna's having his Leela. And there we actually take birth in a particular family that is our eternal family. And there we get trained again, like an amnesiac person has to get trained again in remembering their family members and their. So we get trained again in that. And when Krishna winds up his Leela there, he takes everybody to Goloka. So that is the way that it's supposed to work. Now, if during this life that doesn't manifest, then try again next round until it starts to manifest. And you can go to Krishna's pastimes in the material world even without your full knowledge of your identity being manifest, but then you probably have to take more than one birth there in different universes. So just like we have, I think it's Jiva Goswami in a commentary on Ujjvalamani, talks about how the queens of the Krus and the Purus are desiring to be Krishna's queens. So he says, you know, they haven't yet attained their swarup, although they're in Krishna's Leela. They're seeing Krishna and Balaram walking through Mathura. They're seeing Krishna with his queens in Dwarka. So they're there in Krishna's pastimes, but they haven't yet attained their swarup. They need another birth to do that. Also the wives of the Brahmanas, who then in another life become gopis. One of them became a gopi at that time. So there's all, you know, the fruit seller lady. I don't know why people say women have no varna, you know, Bhagavatam. She was a business lady. So, you know, she was there. But that wasn't her story. So by her touch with Krishna, then she attained prema, and she would have to again join Krishna's pastimes in her story. So that's also possible. One might not finish up again on the earth planet of the four-headed Brahma in Jambudvip, in the Kali Yuga. One might not finish up there, one might finish up someplace else, but one needs to finish. One needs to realize that, and then one doesn't have to have it completely, because we see some of the gopis, they couldn't join the Ras Lila the first night, yes? Because they still had some residual something. So it's not that one has to be 100% to join Krishna's manifest earthly pastimes in one's swarup, but one has to be at least understanding of who one is and what one's position is. So even it has to be some understanding has to have awakened in order to do that. And then that one is trained fully there, one is revived there, and then in the spiritual world there's no more training, there's no sadhana of any kind. One is fully there. At least this is according to the Shastra. I don't think I have no realization of these things, but I just don't speak according to the Shastra way of this. Yes?
At what stage does that some understanding come? Between...
You know, Krishna is a very interesting person, and it can come whenever he wants it to come. Generally, one has to have at least some of the mirror cleaned off before you can see the self. Generally, that takes some time. Generally. But you know how if you have a foggy mirror in a bathroom, you can clean it off really fast with a hair dryer? That may happen. It's not some sort of an absolute formula. And if people try to make something spontaneous an absolute formula, it's like saying, when will you start puberty? Yeah, I just met when I was in New Jersey an old school friend of mine, and you know, she said her 11-year-old daughter went to the doctor. You know, when am I going to start? Not for a while. Oh, when exactly are you going to start puberty? Can you give someone at birth? Can you give them a date? You're going to start on, you know, April 2nd of 2020. If you're healthy, it will happen. Will it happen when you're 11, when you're 13, when you're 17? I don't know. There isn't some sort of a formula. But we have to at least be willing to deal with what's clouding our mirror and not fog it up again. And if we clean the mirror eventually, then we'll have some realization. That's the idea, yes? Is that the idea? Am I getting it right? Am I getting it right? Isn't that the idea? Yeah? We cheto darpana marjana, we clean the mirror. And as we clean the mirror, eventually we look in the mirror, and, you know, first when you look in the mirror, you see the dirt. Correct? Right? You're chanting, and you look in the mirror, and you see, wow. I mean, in the beginning when you're chanting, you think, I'm a devotee, I'm really spiritual. I love Krishna. Oh, wow, look at this. Yeah, I'm in the mode of goodness. Yep. Oh, this one I'm in the mode of goodness too, yeah. And this one too. Oh, yeah. Oh, this totally describes me. I'm a Paramahamsa, yeah. Oh, the great devotee who's always thinking about how to spread. That's me. So first you think like that. And then as you clean a little bit more, what do we call that? PDS? Pure Devotee Center. So then you clean the mirror a little bit more. And you look and you say, oh, I'm Kamsa. Oh my, I hope nobody notice. I'm a devotee. No, I'm not Kamsa. You know, and this is, and you see more and more of the Kamsa stuff. And if you haven't yet seen that, you know, you might not want to keep chanting because it's pretty heavy. Hare Krishna. Nobody told me. When I joined the Hare Krishna movement, that if you keep chanting, you're going to look in the mirror and see Kamsa's face looking back at you. Nobody warned me. I don't know what I would have done if they had warned me, but I don't know. It was not pleasant. You know, and then when you see that, you have to deal with it. We'll be talking about that a lot more with Manashiksha. When you see that, you have to deal with that. And as you deal with that in the proper way, then after a while, you don't just see the dirt anymore. Like a pot, you know, you've burned a pot. Anybody here, who here has ever cleaned a really burnt pot? Who's ever done that? Is that a pretty universal experience? Some of you never cook, obviously. But, you know, people, they don't cook. And I remember going to a supermarket and I said, where are the spices? And she showed me the ketchup and the mustard. People say, oh, Hare Krishna. So anyway, you know, you're scrubbing this burnt pot and at first all you're seeing is black, yeah? And then after a while, a little silver shows through, correct? And then more and more, and then you get kind of excited. As we clean the heart, at a certain point, some silver should show through. That's what's supposed to happen. And if it's not happening, you know, after 10, 15, 20 years, Prabhupada said, you know, if you're in Krishna consciousness, then you will experience this. He said, otherwise it's like you say, I'm eating but I'm not satisfied. He said, then you're not really eating. Or you have parasites. So if the mirror is not getting clean, then either we're not really in Krishna consciousness, a concept, was he really in Krishna consciousness? I mean, either you're not really in Krishna consciousness or you're committing some offenses. We focus a lot on the offenses, but I think that not really in Krishna consciousness is something we should focus on as well. Because you can be really in Krishna consciousness and offensive, or you can be thinking you're in Krishna consciousness. Is that okay? Yeah, it's getting late. Yes?
Thank you for the nice class, Mother Rama. So I have two questions. So in terms of the eternal spiritual identity, eternal spiritual nature, does it mean that it never changes? Like, Nanda Maharaj always likes green, so you're always going to like green, always like green, or, you know, all these characteristics of an eternal nature. It's always stays the same. It's not dynamic at all. So that's one. And the other one is simultaneous expansions of the jiva. Like, you're simultaneously...
Yes.
So you have simultaneous identities?
Correct.
At the same time?
You can, if you want.
Yeah. And also the first one is, like...
The first one, personality, of course, is always dynamic. Just because you may eternally like green doesn't mean that your personality is not dynamic. Even materially, our personality is dynamic. Certainly spiritually, Krishna's personality is dynamic. He's constantly expanding. There's always some mystery. Everything spiritual is always dynamic.
So what stays the same that defines the personality? What changes a lot? What's the difference?
Well, okay, let's just think of it materially speaking. So materially, each of us in this life have a particular nature that doesn't change. And no matter what you do, it doesn't change. You can try and you can try and you can try, and it doesn't change. We have certain aspects of our personality in this life that are fixed for this life. I mean, you can try to change them, like you can dye your hair, but dyed hair usually looks artificial in the root show. So we have certain natures. But then how we express those natures can change very dramatically. And manifest in all kinds of different ways. I mean, just for example, somebody, when we were getting our photos for our Russian visa yesterday, and we were with one devotee from Soho, and she was saying, oh, you know, I used to take a lot of photographs, I used to like to be a photographer. And I said, well, are you doing anything with that anymore? She says, well, now I'm using it in video. Do you follow? Does that make sense to you? You know, when I was young, I used to like to paint. I took a lot of art classes, and I used to like to paint, and now I use that to do multimedia presentations. So my basic nature, that I like to do things creative with visual arts, that has not changed. How it manifests changed. I manifest in many different ways. That's very dynamic.
The basic
mood and nature stays the same, but that can manifest in many, many different ways. It's not only going to manifest in one way. Does that make sense to you? That's true even with our material. It doesn't mean I have a different personality because I'm putting together a multimedia presentation on a computer rather than putting oil on a canvas.
So nature, I mean, the same mood, but different ways to express that same mood?
Yes. An infinite variety of ways to express that mood in relation to Krishna. That's definitely okay. So I think we should end here. Srila Prabhupada ki.